2015 turbocharged Volkswagens. This includes the versatile 43-mile-per-gallon clean-burning TDI Sport Wagon. Over 40 Sport Wagons to choose from. All reasonable offers will be considered on our complete lineup of Volkswagens. Now is truly the best time to stop by, call, or click walkervt.com on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Sold!
We go to the phone. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Rob Simpson, who's the president and CEO of the Brattleboro Retreat, obviously located in the location you might gather. It is a critical component here in the state's mental health system, mostly a private organization that has patients coming in privately, but is also taken on the responsibility after Tropical Storm Irene, 14 beds there as part of the state system. Rob, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm good. My pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I want to first talk a little bit about depression. I know you're a PhD, you're a doctor, and I know you've been following the news as we all have. We had this terrible case here in our own state of the beloved Cheryl Hanna, also Robin Williams. So what are you doing at the Brattleboro Retreat to treat people for depression? Is there anything, are there new therapies out there? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, it's an excellent question. And, with celebrity suicides and Madeline Cunin's editorial recently courageously talking about her father's suicide, the topic of depression and mental illness and addiction is out there in the general public. And it is a stigmatized area. It certainly takes courage for people to come forward, to talk about family members, to talk about it themselves. And the reality is that depression is a psychiatric disease. It's a brain disorder. And your brain is not working correctly. And so the point of treatments are to find out the exact cause, the correct diagnosis, and then to have effective treatment. Sometimes it's safety, bringing a person into the hospital, doing an extensive assessment, looking at their history, determining past compliance with certain medications, and then targeting, what is exactly the problem and what's the right medication. Because medications actually do help significantly. They have their side effects, but overall, untreated depression is a potentially deadly disease.
Mm-hmm. So it's mostly being treated pharmacologically?
Mostly pharmacologically, but also with psychotherapies. The research studies are pretty clear when you take depression and you find a targeted medication based on a person's background, genetic makeup, family member history of depression or other psychiatric disease, and you mirror that with cognitive behavioral therapy and other therapeutic interventions, people do much, much better, significantly better. So just medication alone is not the answer. Although some people respond quickly and do very, very well.
What is going on in the brain that leaves somebody with the choice that killing themselves is a better option?
That's a really excellent question. And because it is disordered thinking that in some cases began a long time ago. And there's a very interesting study called the ACE study. It's Kaiser Permanente Insurance Company. It began in California, moving across the country. Has been doing, they looked at, it's the adverse child event study. They looked at what's going on in brain development in children early on in life who have been abused either physically, sexually, verbally, and what happens in their brain development, and what sort of life outcomes do they have? What's the incidence of major depression, trauma syndromes, early death, poor choices, driving drunk, driving too fast, choosing inappropriate partners? And the study is fairly clear that the more trauma you have in the first 2 to 3 years of life, the more likely your brain is unable to essentially think correctly and normally. And we know a lot about that because, what happens in the brain is the prefrontal lobe, all the information comes in early, and that flows down into a place called the hippocampus, which sort of creates a file and a memory of that information, and it starts to sort it. Like if I see a picture of Mark Johnson, I will try to file, when I see him personally, I'll try to see if the picture I've created is the same picture I've filed, And then the next important point is there'd be an emotional valence attached to it by the amygdala, another part of the brain, that identifies, do I like that feeling when I see that person? Does it make me feel safe, happy? What is the feeling that comes up? And in children who have trauma histories, early abuse, that whole filing system is not working correctly. And we know it tees them up for later problems in life. You know, can we assume that someone like Robin Williams may have had issues like that? I can't make any of those assumptions.
Right.
But I can make assumptions that perhaps he also suffered from another disease called bipolar disease, which if you take children who have that early adverse event, and then they may have in their history or their biology predisposition to having bipolar disease, it is going to make that management of that disease much more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And the potential for suicide and other adverse choices grows exponentially.
All right, so the Brattleboro Retreat is the place where kids go and adolescents go who have difficulty. Do you treat depression in young kids differently than you do in an adult? I mean, can you sort of save a kid before the frontal lobe gets fully developed?
I think you can. And there are a lot of great studies beginning in the 40s, actually, with Margaret Mahler was one of the first individuals to look at the instance of child mismatching with a parent or childhood trauma to see if psychotherapeutically could you make a difference in the developmental stages that then followed. Because there are many rapid developmental stages that happen, as you well know, between 7 months and 4 or 5 years of age.
Right.
Developing object constancy, the ability to love yourself when you don't feel good about yourself, evocative memory to evoke a positive feeling about a parent who you sometimes feel angry at. Those are critical stages of, frankly, not only psychological development, but brain development. The pathways that allow this to happen, as I've just mentioned a minute ago, are set up during this time. So I think what we know from pediatric areas is that if you intervene early, you can potentially make a change in how that brain goes on and develops there forward. So like an imprinting, you remember Conrad Lorenz studied ducks. If the baby duck imprinted on the beak of the parent, it could in fact eat. If it didn't, it could not eat. So there's a certain critical period that happens in childhood that maybe sets the course for a person's later development and outcome.
Hmm. Do you treat adolescents differently than adults?
Yes, we do, of course. Yes, the developmental stages are differently. And, you know, the retreat has just opened up a new program called the Emerging Adult, because in the last 15 years there's been significant literature about brain development is not over at age 18. It goes on to sometimes, you know, late 20s, early 26 plus. So we know there's a lot going on in the brain. It's not all completely formulated in place, and that has to do with the angst of adolescence. I mean, if you're driving down the road and you see a bear jump out in front of you, emotionally, you react much quicker than you do cognitively.
Uh-huh.
And an adolescent, their emotions are much more developed than their cognitive ability to think of strategies. And we now know that that continues on to the mid-20s. So working with adolescents and that early emerging adult period, it requires a different strategy for a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Total number of beds at the retreat is what?
We now have 122 online. We have 149 capability by license. And in the last 7 years, we've grown from about 40 to 50 staff beds to 122 staff beds at present time. So we've had significant growth in the last 7 years, employee base going from somewhere in the mid-300s to today somewhere in the high 800s.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty significant growth. As we know, sometimes growth can be a challenge. Has it been a challenge?
It has been a challenge. It is a challenge to grow. In fact, I was at the Vermont Hospital Board meeting this morning talking about what it's like in general now. Whenever there's a sort of an evolution or a revolution happening in an area like healthcare reform, you know, people have to absorb so much changes. You know, the federal government regulations, requirements of billing, requirements of documentation, requirements of safety management. I think when you're also growing, in addition, you know, it's just a small place, but you're now growing, you add the issues of growth, which have to do with how teams get together and work together. And you probably know this quite well, Mark, whether it's your family or your high school football team, or teams take time to develop. And the best developed teams have good leadership and good processes and almost instinctively know how to get that bear taken care of when it arrives.
All right. We won't talk about my football career this morning. Rob Simpson's joining us. He's the president and CEO of the Brattleboro Retreat. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. I'm going to ask this question more generally. We can talk a little bit about some of these federal regulations that have been problematic. But how difficult is it for you and the Brattleboro Retreat, how difficult is the challenge to keep people safe?
Well, I think I would say in general, the challenge has grown for psychiatric facilities in the last 15 years. And one of the major reasons is that throughout the country, we had a closure of significant number of beds. In fact, a number of statistics I once saw through the National Association of Psychiatric Health Systems was 44,000 beds have closed over the last 15 years. So what does that mean? Well, on the one hand, it means that maybe people who were not very acute would come to a psychiatric hospital, and there would be a continuum of sort of the worried well all the way up to the most seriously, persistently ill on the same unit. That's no longer true. Now the people who were admitted are very acute, and the criteria are a danger to oneself or someone else, or inability to care for oneself psychiatrically. So the bar has been raised, and the acuity on the units and the complexity of the patients is dramatically different than it was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that does make a difference in how you have to focus on safety. Most hospitals have ongoing, continuous, in fact, all hospitals are required to, performance improvement, quality care. We have the retreat, significant numbers of ongoing formal and informal, continuous improvement processes like safety management, fall risks, safety searches, elimination of police. CMS has said police should not come in to help psychiatric or any hospital when there's a patient emergency, unless there's a serious risk that the patient has committed a crime. So there are many changes we have to educate in the least restrictive environment. Mock codes and putting in electronic health records, employee wellness, safety management, over and over. Many, many performance improvement processes happen in psychiatric hospitals and certainly in ours.
Mm-hmm. But I guess, is it even possible to keep all of the sort of the safety threats to a patient? I mean, can you think of them all, and can you actually button them all up?
Well, that is a great question, and I don't think anybody is perfect, and no unit is perfect, no person's perfect, and there are always opportunities to miss something, or maybe not to see. It's like when you walk into your favorite living room, you don't notice that initially that maybe there's a new picture over in the corner that your spouse put up, because you're so used to that place being as you've always seen it. Or maybe the picture's been there for 5 years, and suddenly you go, hey, when did that picture get here?
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly it dawns on you that maybe it's new. It's a little bit, so when we do safety rounds in hospitals, we have to rotate the eyes that are coming into the room, because fresh eyes see things that older eyes don't see. So we do that routinely. We're bringing in our board members to start to see what they may see that we hadn't seen. So it is, and that's just in the environment of care. And now we're talking about just patients. Do you see a change in a patient's status clearly? It's hard to be inside someone else's mind, Mark, as you know.
Mm-hmm. So there have been three, is it accurate to say there have been three suicides at the retreat over the last 2.5 years, and then there's this attempted suicide in June?
Well, yes, and that is accurate.
Okay. Is that
not all inpatients, some of them in the ambulatory setting.
Understood. Is that number, I don't even know how to ask this question, is that number out of the norm? I mean, is that what you have to sort of expect as part of this establishment?
Well, that's a very, very good question, and one that many people, of course, are asking and questioning. And so if you look at the data about suicide in psychiatric hospitals and how you assess suicidality and what are the rates and the benchmarks and how do you know when there's a trend or something's changing, last year there were about 1,500 to 1,800 deaths in psychiatric facilities, suicides. But there may have been more that maybe they weren't reported. I can't answer that. So that's one issue. It looks like that suicide is an extraordinarily rare event in general. Maybe two, maybe three per 100,000 admissions, if you could gather all the admissions in a state and or in a region. So it is rare. And at the retreat, we've had a significant number of admissions over the last 7 years. We've had close to 44,000 patient days on any given year, 25,000 inpatient admissions. And we also have to remember that the retreat is not a small hospital. It's a bigger hospital with acuity in different areas: children, adolescents, emerging adults, chronically persistently mentally ill, LGBT community, uniformed service workers, policemen, firemen, veterans. All of those populations have acuity issues, disease issues, some complicated by addiction. We have a dual diagnosis unit, addiction, mental illness. So the size is also an issue that we tend to bring in more acute patients to the retreat than you might see on a 20-bed unit because of the fact that we specialize and we have a broad reach and a broad range. Mm-hmm. I think so. While do I think there's a trend at the retreat about suicide? No, I don't. Do I think we're out of the norm and out of what's happening around the country? No. If you can certainly check that. We can talk to Departmental Health and others about those status.
One of the criticisms, as you are fully aware, that lawmakers have at times criticized the retreat and felt like they haven't been fully informed about either suicides or problems with the federal regulations. The system seems to be, Rob, that you're supposed to notify the Department of Mental Health and then they're supposed to notify lawmakers. Why don't you guys just also tell lawmakers, too, when, for example, you go and testify?
Well, that's a very good question. And part of it, this started maybe 3 years ago when the state hospital decision was made, 2011. Are we going to move to a distributive model, the retreat, Rutland, and the new Berlin facility, as opposed to just creating a new state hospital? How does all this communication happen? Because these private hospitals, where a portion were public patients, but many patients were private patients. So I think that at the time with Patrick Flood and the legislature, we agreed that we would all try to go through the Departmental Health, because this is we're sort of a village. There are a lot of people who want to know, and how do you make sure that you're transparent and somebody doesn't feel as if they weren't in the know? So we did, the system did come up with going through DMH and notifying chairs, et cetera, and the legislature. And maybe it's not a perfect system. It's the system we have now, and could it be improved? Probably. Most systems can be. And so I think that as we work with the rules and make sure that everybody gets to hear what they need to hear and when they want to hear it, I think we'll all be better at it. I think we're on a journey.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any second thoughts about how you've handled it so far? I mean, were there times where you should have just said it anyway, even though you notified the Department of Mental Health?
Well, that's a good question, too, because there's always there are always complicating factors having to do with privacy, personal rights, CMS reports when they're public, when they're not public, whether you're in a period where they're doing a, they've seen you and they've surveyed you, but they haven't given you the final report yet. So I think there's some caveats to that. In general, do I wish I could say what happened every day? Yes, I do, within reasons, bounds of common sense and legal privilege and regulatory expectations. Because we don't have anything to hide at the retreat. We're a good place. We've been here 180 years. We must be doing something right, and I think we are doing many, many things right. The fact that, you know, physicians come from faraway states, from, you know, great universities, that staff move in from out of state to be here, says something about who we are and how we work. So I think that we could be better. We will be better.
Because some of these stories make it look as though you are trying to hide something.
Well, I don't. Well, I don't think we are, but it's perspective, I suppose. It's timing of when the information becomes available. I don't believe that we have anything to hide, and as long as we're, you know, meeting the expectations of regulators and the federal government, we will do that and want to do that. There are issues around, you know, patient protections, around names, around that small states, you know, people are known, so to speak, where they might not be known in a large population area like Boston. So I think there are some prudent questions that have to be sometimes addressed around information.
Mm-hmm. Are there enough beds in Vermont? One of the stories that came out after Cheryl Hannah's death is that she tried to get in up at Fletcher Island. There wasn't room.
Well, that's a very good question. There will be another, you know, that when Berlin is fully up and running, another 25 beds in the system. But again, Fletcher Allen will pull back a little bit on taking care of some of the state patients. Even though the retreat has 14 assigned beds, we still have another 7 to 10 on other units that are state patients. So that's a very good question. I think the issue, Mark, is related to what's downstream. What can we do to discharge a patient who no longer meets the acute requirements of inpatient care? And I think the state is on a journey to make sure we bring more of those services online. And that was the whole idea anyway that the governor had. If we create a continuum of care fully funded, that people shouldn't stay in hospitals. In fact, we don't want people to stay in hospitals who shouldn't be in hospitals. When you get stabilized, your treatment plan's in place, we understand what your illness is. We've treated it effectively on an inpatient acute basis. Let's go down to the next level. Secure residential, respite bed, community living with support. Those downstream services are not fully in place, and they need to be. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like how we manage in medicine. You know, you wouldn't want to put every cardiac patient in the ICU unless, of course, they were about to have a heart attack or need a stent. And you know, so we've created, you know, outside services and supports, even including using physician's assistants, home visits. We have to sort of create that same model in psychiatry all the way down the line.
You know, what you just said there would not provide me a lot of confidence in this discussion about whether to release Elizabeth McTeague, who was found incompetent to stand trial after shooting her boss, who's been at the retreat.
Well, that's an interesting question about what do you do with a forensic capital crime patient and what level of care is appropriate. I think that's something that the legislature and the governor and others have to address. You know, many patients, without commenting on any individual patient, many patients when they're in, you know, forensically adjudicated to a hospital, get to a certain level, and then you're not necessarily treating any longer. You're waiting for a secure place for them to go next. I think that's a public health question that people have to resolve.
Was it a right decision for the Brattleboro retreat to get involved in the state system here? Do you wish you hadn't done it in hindsight?
No, not at all. Absolutely the correct decision. When the governor called me at 9 in the morning and said, can you help? And I emptied out a brand new unit, LGBT unit, and just dispersed patients throughout the hospital, and then 2 years later reopened that unit. Was it the right thing to do? It was absolutely the right thing to do. We have been in the state business. We've been for over, I think it's 40 or 50 years, we've been the state facility for children and adolescents. We are the state hospital for children and adolescents. So I think it was the right decision, and I think it's part of our mission with Anna Marsh to, you know, be a Vermont service to people who have addiction and mental illness, and that includes public and private patients.
Let's take a call from Corinth Forbes. Good morning.
You know, what a subject in this day and age. One question I did have, and that is with this today's electronic medical records, just about anything that happens, you become a marked person. Marked being basically you lose a lot of rights if you do seek some psychiatric help or consultation. And not all of it's major. It could be a death in the family, a divorce, loss of a child, temporarily. But is there a method of expunging any of these situations so that a person is not marked for life? Insurance companies won't deal with you. I don't believe you can possess a gun or hunt or anything else. But
okay.
Would that possibly keep people from seeking help if there wasn't a way to expunge it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks, Corinne. Thanks, Forbes. I appreciate it. Rob?
Yes, I heard that question. That is a very good question. And, you know, the question arises out of the issues of stigma and mental illness and addiction. You know, they are still stigmatized diseases. If you, you know, what was the, Joanne, was a show on television recently. Jane Pauley, I think, had the show, and she had 12 mothers on and said, a few of those mothers had children who were mentally ill, and they said, what's the difference when your child is mentally ill versus the child has a diabetes or, you know, an early mitral valve prolapse problem? What's the difference? And women said, stigma and sympathy. And I think we still live in a society where mental illness and addiction are stigmatized, but we do have federal parity laws saying that that's illegal from many perspectives, not just, you know, from denying care. Insurance companies can no longer deny care. They have to treat people with these diseases at parity. But that's slowly unfolding in this country. The issue of getting a gun permit, if you've been diagnosed with a mental illness, I think that varies by state on the level of the illness and whether or not someone has completed treatment or the physician has signed off on it. So there are vagaries across the nation about this, and I think the question is an excellent one.
Let's go to Barrytown. Xenia, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Mr. Portman.
Simpson.
Three questions, sort of from the reputation that the retreat used to have. And I'll rattle off all three and then let you answer them. First, does the expansion of staff include hiring back all the therapists who were laid off a few years ago? Second, is the shock treatment still disproportionately given to elderly patients? And third, does the retreat now fully recognize the laws in Vermont on advance directives? And does the retreat now work with the healthcare agent appointed by the patient in their advanced directive? The retreat was fairly terrible in all three of those areas in the past.
Okay. All right. Let's see what we can find out. Thank you, Xenia. Rob?
On the question of hiring staff back, that's a complex question. Here's the answer we have so far. That what is, with lengths of stay declining in hospitals, average length of stay being 7 to 14 days on the outside, that the therapeutic staffing program that we used to have at the retreat, we were no longer getting reimbursement to cover all of those costs. Unfortunate reality of running a hospital, particularly in psychiatry, where the rates of reimbursement are not generous, and we don't have the same sort of opportunities for larger revenue sources from surgeries, et cetera. So we had to basically respond to the payer market that we lived in, and that was an unfortunate time for the retreat. And also, the retreat had been through a period before I arrived of losing money for many years, and we needed to sort of prove to our bankers and for our expansion plan that we could actually run a ongoing going concern operation. So that was part of that. But we have begun to bring back components of that in a different way because I think patient needs are different today. And in particular, we've recently hired occupational therapists because we believe that our patients not only have to be treated for their psychiatric illness, but they need to develop skill sets so that they can go back and have avocations and work life outside. So the OTs are really targeted to that area. So that's the first question. The second, ECT, we don't do any longer at the retreat. The elderly across the nation, you said disproportionately treated with shock treatment. That may be because depression in the elderly is increasingly common because people are living longer, brains are aging, and bodies that have other diseases, cancer, heart disease, strokes, often are accompanied by depression, and ECT has been effective there. The retreat may or may not move back into ECT. We're not doing it now. Laws on advanced directives. The advanced directive law has come out recently in Vermont, and we do accept advanced directives, but we cannot allow a person to commit suicide in a psychiatric facility or take their lives in a facility. We would be closed down by the federal government if we did that.
Mm-hmm. Just two other questions I have, and thank you again for your time. How serious is the threat of losing federal funding right now for the retreat?
Well, here's what I would say about CMS. We partner with CMS, Joint Commission, Department of Mental Health, all four of those arenas, providers, DPH, DMH, CMS, Joint Commission, they have a different approach to safety management and conditions of participation. They're very different. CMS's approach is to take these conditions that they have for participation around patient safety and extremely seriously. They're focused on assuring that their conditions are met and patients are safe. So when you have a condition of participation that you're not meeting, CMS sends you a letter saying that until you meet it, or we'll give you a certain amount of time, but if you don't meet it, you will be terminated. We're not the first hospital to get one of those letters. I don't believe we'll be the last. It is the way in which CMS works. It's somewhat daunting to get a letter like that. They're somewhat automatic notification process. But I will tell you that it is a rare hospital in this country that is closed down by CMS for not being able to meet a condition of participation. And the retreat, every time we've had one, we have fixed it, and we will continue to do so.
Are the regulations, is the standard too high?
The standard too high? I don't think the standards are too high. If you go in and read the CMS manual, and it's long. I mean, I think there are over 1,800 conditions of participation. I could be wrong on the number, but it's many. And so what it means, of course, is that you have to have a process in your hospital that you're aware of what they are. So you're not surprised when someone comes in and says you're not meeting it. So we have a team of people that look every day on how we're doing on those conditions. And, we also self-report when we're not meeting or we've had an incident. And when you self-report, you're going to have a visit. And when you have a visit, you may or may not meet the condition. And we've had many visits where we've had self-reports, and either by us or by a patient or a staff member, and we've met the condition, and we get a letter saying you're fine. That's fairly routine in hospitals as well. So we will continue to meet the conditions, and while my heartbeat goes up, I'm always vigilant. I don't believe that the retreat will be closed.
Last question. Do you think there's more depression out there today?
More depression? That's a very good question. And in fact, I would probably say there is. And that has to do with something I mentioned a minute ago. The baby boomers are living longer. Life is longer. Brains age when cars age. When things age, they don't work quite as well any longer. And when you get other diseases, depression is potentially a precursor and around the corner. In fact, when you do cardiac stents in hospital, we've learned that the incidence of depression is very high post-cardiac stent, and the opportunity for readmission for another heart event is higher if that depression isn't treated. And that has to do with people in their 50s plus on up. So, yes, I would say depression is increasing based on the increased lifespan of people.
Thank you for your time this morning. I really appreciate it very much.
Mark, thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate that.
Dr. Rob Simpson is the CEO and president of the Brattleboro Retreat with 120-plus beds, psychiatric beds, in the southern part of the state, 14 part of the state system. A moment of your time for our friends at Jamison Insurance. If you're looking for a great hometown company to get your insurance through, make it the Jamison family. They're easy to reach. I'll give you a phone number here in a moment and a website. One of the reasons why you would want to do business with Jamison Insurance as opposed to some other places, they're an independent agent. That means that they go out and find policies from a wider variety of carriers than some companies do. And that should be advantageous to you, right? So give them a call today. They'd be happy to review the auto policies, homeowners policies that you currently have in place. And you can do that by calling them at 496-2080. If you're a business owner, John Jamison will come to your place of business and make it all happen. And he'll do a review there on site, write up a report for you, and let you know if you're getting the best possible deal. Again, 496-2080. They also have offices here in Waterbury and up in Richmond. That number is for their office in Waitsfield. And you can find them on the web at jamisoninsurance.com.
At Midstate Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram and Hyundai, we're different. The proof is in the experience. Buying a car should be fun and easy. Being a good listener is part of our job. We work hard to bring the process to a simple conclusion, finding you the perfect car and making it affordable. We have some great deals this month, like a brand new Jeep Patriot at only $14,980 or a brand new Hyundai Accent for only $15,880. And our used car prices constantly rank as best buys. But don't take my word for it. Here's Taylor to tell us about her experience at Midstate.
I have no words to describe how amazing Midstate is. I had no idea I was going to drive off in a basically new car. Everyone understood that I just started building my credit. And people at Midstate made it so easy for me to have a low payment. Midstate will always be my go-to dealership because here they make things happen.
Stop by Midstate Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram and Hyundai today and put the fun back into purchasing a car.
At Midstate Dodge and Hyundai, we make it easy, we make it easy.
WYSIWYG, WYSIWYG, WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get, and what you are is what you eat. WYSIWYG is a weekend-long lakeside festival of farms, food, music, and art. Farm fresh menus will be prepared in collaborations between Hen of the Wood and Pete's Greens, Bluebird Barbecue and Tangletown Farms, Misery Loves Company and Butterworks Farms, and many more. Speakers and educators will enlighten and entertain. Vermont's best craft brews will flow. Larger-than-life art will dot the landscape, and music from fantastic performers such as Shaky Graves, Lee Fields, Patrick Watson, and Moonhooch will fill the air. Come join us for two perfect days filled with farm-fresh food, music, fun, and learning. The world can be changed simply by eating well. August 23rd and 24th on the Burlington College Lakeside Campus. Get your tickets now at WYSIWYGFestival.com. The WYSIWYG Festival is proudly supported by Healthy Living and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Vermont. WYSIWYG.
Thinking about doing some projects on your home? A home improvement loan from Granite Hills Credit Union is the answer. It's quick and easy. Borrow up to $10,000 with this personal loan at a great fixed low rate. No appraisal or title search required. Remodel your kitchen, replace your roof, or add a room. You decide. Looking to do a larger project? We have home equity loans with new lower rates or a line of credit that allows the flexibility of check writing. Give us a call, stop in, or visit us at granitehills.org to find out how you can make your remodeling dreams come true.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
It's no secret, Mihuron Supermarket is a great place to shop. I'm Tom Mihuron. For over seven decades, Mihuron's has been catering to the needs of the Mad River Valley and beyond. We have custom-cut meats, fresh produce and seafood, regular and organic grocery, locally produced foods galore, topped off by an extraordinary wine and beer department and a state liquor agency. Shop Mihuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center, Waitsfield.
This is Dave Birmingham and Bentley from 802cars.com. At 802 Toyota, you pay what we pay.
Every new vehicle in stock will be sold at employee pricing, with no exceptions. You pay the same low price a dealership employee pays. The 6th Annual Employee Pricing Program is on at 802 Toyota, on every new Toyota in stock.
So if I want a Corolla,
you pay what we pay.
I want a Camry.
The all-new Highlander works,
you pay what we pay.
Don't forget my RAV4 either.
From Yaris to Tundra at 802 Toyota,
you pay what we pay.
We're so easy to find. Click on 802toyota.com. Call 844-802-TOYOTA. Drive ID9 to exit 7. Employee pricing is less than 1 minute off the interstate. 802 Toyota, driving to be Vermont's number one Toyota dealer.
Moment of your time for our friends in beautiful South Barry at Jet Service Envelope. If you have printing projects that need to get completed, well, you're going to have to do provide the information that gets printed. They won't do that for you at Jet. You can't call them up and say, hey, could you do my whole report for me and then print it? You have to provide the raw material. That was the term I was looking for. And then you can send it electronically over to Jet Service Envelope. It's not like the old days where you have to put it in a manila folder and hope you don't spill coffee all over it on the way over. Not that that would ever happen. Today, you just send it over as an attachment, a file, PDF file, things like that, and then they just make it happen. Want to get pricing information? Give them a jingle at 229-9335. That's 229-9335. A lot of information on their website as well, too. And that is jetservice-envelope.com. Again, the phone number, 229-9335. It is jetservice-envelope.com for the website. We'll talk with Eric Davis to kick off the program tomorrow, our political science guru. We'll talk with him about Senator Jeffords. Also, we'll talk about the Milne campaign. That'll wrap it up for today. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day, everybody. Come back and join us same time, same place tomorrow. Would ya? This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush. And AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier News is next.
AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Attorney General Eric Holder says he's among the...